Welcome to Finish Well Podcast, where changing the world starts with changing your home, with your host, Meredith Curtis.
Hi, welcome to Finish Well Podcast. I'm your host, Meredith Curtis. Today we're talking about of the people, by the people, and for the people. A little bit about the Constitution, the Declaration of Independence, and the Gettysburg Address, and how that all applies to us today. And this is episode 205. If you want to see the show notes, you can look for episode 205. And I am just so excited to be with you today, but one of the reasons I'm so excited is my friend Linda Salmon is with us. Linda, welcome.
Thank you, Mary. Good to be here.
Linda has a degree in law, a degree in communications, a degree in religious studies, as well as having been in the business world for the past 20 years.
Yes.
20 years. So she, like me, shares a great love for our nation and some concerns with things that we're seeing right now. But we just are really excited to talk to you because I know people have a lot of questions and you're hearing things from over here and over there and here and below, and it's just getting a little bit crazy. So we are going to look today at how our founders designed our government to work, and then how we can effectively live in that government that was designed by them, and what things we need to be careful of that may destroy that. So we're going to start off by talking about these words from Abraham Lincoln in the Gettysburg Address. He talked about a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. So let's start with of the people, a government of the people. Lynn, what is Abraham Lincoln even talking about?
He's really saying that the government is a government of people, not of leaders. It's a government that's made up by the citizenry. And we're not a democracy where everybody gets to vote on everything that comes before Congress. We elect representatives, and from the very founding of our nation, we had representative government. But those representatives are representatives of you and me. They're there to represent our rights, our freedoms, our needs, and they're there, according to the Constitution, to provide certain very specific things to make the nation run, and so that we, the people, can live in harmony, in civility, to have justice, righteousness, roads, speed limits, all the things that allow us to live in a nation. It's really a social contract, but it comes from us. It's of the people. So in the Declaration of Independence, which we're looking at right here, it says by a declaration by the representatives of the United States of America, of the people of the United States, not just a place, but the citizenry. And Lincoln in his Gettysburg Address, which was so beautiful, right? He reminded people that this nation was conceived in liberty and dedicated to a proposition that all men are created equal and women were created equal. And then he reminded us that it was of the people, by the people, for the people. And that's why the Constitution begins with the words, we, the people. We instituted, not leaders, not John Hancock, not George Washington. They were our representatives, but they are accountable and were accountable to the people for everything they did.
Good. It's in stark contrast to so much of history, because yes, even starting with Nimrod, who was a mighty hunter before the Lord, and it talks about the cities that he founded, only really we think of it as him founding cities, but really what he was doing is he was taking over cities, conquering them, and they would then exist only for him to serve his leadership. And throughout history, you look at the Babylonians and the Assyrians and the Persians and the Greeks, and it wasn't, well, the Greeks started in Athens with democracy, and the Romans did try a republic for several hundred years, but then it immediately went to an empire, where all of those nations existed for the sake of the leaders in power to bring them their taxes, to labor for them, to fight for them, to give them more power. And here along comes this idea of the people that, no, it's not about the leaders, it's about the people. And I think when you grow up in America, you don't realize the stark contrast of that to all of history, really.
And it doesn't even have to, if you're going back very far in time and talking about human nature, which is what the founders had studied and what they had learned out of the writers in Europe, this idea of natural rights, the idea of understanding what men were made of and what happened to men when they got power. And this absolute power that goes through history where monarchies and kingdoms and empires were ruling, and people didn't have much of a say.
Right.
They might have a say locally, but ultimately there was a lord, there was a king, there was a queen, there was a ruler, there was an emperor, there was a dictator, there was a Führer. And what's really sad when you read history, and first of all, one of the worst things that's happening in our country, I know we're going to get to this, is if you don't understand where government comes from, and you don't understand the founding of America and what the documents meant, the ideas, not the people who founded
right.
it, but the ideas that they brought to the table were very, very new in some sense, but borrowed from ideas of earlier times that didn't quite work. And it was this idea that leadership is not there for to lead you and me. Leadership is there to represent you and me.
Yes, good point.
And
good
true
point.
Leadership in the was really a biblical leadership where you were truly, as Jesus said, you were servants of the people. Every representative, including the President of the United States, the Attorney General, every judge, every police officer, anyone in authority in America has their authority given by, we're getting to of the people, by the people, by the governed.
Yes.
The authority given to you by the governed, and the governed also can take it away. And they're right, Mary. Years and years, people would be put into power. And you know, one of the saddest stories in the Word of God is when God wants to be in direct relationship with the people of Israel. He wants to be their God, and he wants them to be their people. And now they have a relationship. They have accountability. They've got to self-govern. They've got to choose leaders, and they've got to monitor things. And in the end, they say, we want a king like all the other nations.
Yep.
And so what we see in history, and the founders knew this, was a propensity of people to give up self-government, because they want someone else to lead. And it's sad, and you think about it, when you think about it in stark terms, why would anyone do that? And yet, over and over again, we do it. And in America, when we don't understand what it means to be a representative government and what it means to be a citizen, we begin to abdicate that role to our government. And so when we look to our government to feed us, we look to our government to help us when we've lost our job. There are limits to those things, because we should never, ever allow the government to take the place of family,
right,
church, self.
Exactly. And I think so often people who value freedom, their attitude is, I want the government to protect my rights, ensure my rights, but I want them to let me live my life. And then you have other people who say, I want you to take care of me, to meet every need. And if that is the desire of your heart, if someone's going to come to me and say, I want you to take care of me and meet every need, then I am going to feel like that person belongs to me and I can tell them what to do. And that's the same with the government. So the more you want to receive from the government, the less it becomes a government by the people. And what's really interesting is, you know, speaking of history again, throughout history, government has been all about being for enriching the power of the leaders.
Right. Even enriching, in the name of enriching the kingdom, which then they would say is the people. Right. Or the government, if we're doing well, you're doing well kind of thing. And yeah, well, power corrupts and absolute power corrupts.
Absolutely. Yes.
And the framers understood this so well. And that's why they created the three branches. That's why they created the bicameral house system, the Congress with the Senate and the House of Representatives. That's why they labored over what that representative government meant. They labored in the Federalist Papers. You can read how they Yes. labored over what everything meant, who had power, what were the checks, what were the vetoes, what were the balances, who could vote, how many had to vote for this and how many had to vote for this. And a lot of people get very frustrated with the American government. I'm one of them, that they move at a glacial pace.
But they were created to do
that. They were created to do that. And while we may get frustrated at that glacial pace when it comes to things like, and we can name them very glaringly, civil rights, mm-hmm. the woman's right to vote, we can be frustrated. We should be glad they move slowly because they cannot do harm to our rights very quickly.
Right.
What's scary is when the government begins to move quickly through executive order, the government begins to move quickly in a way that's more led by what I would call executive leadership than representative leadership.
Exactly.
That's when rights begin to get carved out. And they're usually carved out, and this is what's got everyone's got to be aware of. They're usually carved out because there's some good thing they're going to be doing for you, or there's something they're going to protect you from. And that's when we have to be really wary of, okay, they're taking my right, but why? And then they explain it, and it sounds so good.
So benevolent.
But you got to hold those rights really carefully. James Madison didn't even want – he's called Mr. Bill of – no, it's Monroe. It was Mr. Bill of Rights. I always confuse the two. Forgive me. But when they wrote the Bill of Rights, they did not want to write them down because they said – if we write them down one day in America, and you're hearing this now, it's Yes. really scary, but one day in America, the American people will think or be told that the rights that you have, freedom of speech, freedom of assembly, freedom of worship, freedom to right to a jury trial, right to your everything, right to a gun, everything, those rights come from the government, the benevolent government. The documents of the founders give you rights, and they can also be taken away. No. The founders believed, and the documents declare, that our rights come from God. They are inalienable, which means even you should not be able to give them away. And now government today is telling you that your rights come from them, even from other people.
That is so interesting, because I was watching a clip from CNN, and they were talking about conservative Americans mm-hmm. and saying that they were so confused because conservative Americans believe that their rights come from God and not from the government. And the woman, the CNN news anchor, was very confused that anyone would think that. And I was very confused listening, because I've always grown up, we read the Declaration of Independence, we read the Constitution. And I think if we are going to continue in this government that's for the people, it's not to enrich the leaders. It's not to give them unlimited power. It's not so whatever they think is a cool thing to do can happen. It's that it's for the people to protect their rights, to enable them to pursue their own lives. And one of the things that's so critical for that, and we're going to talk about an environment in which a government of the people, by the people, and for the people can thrive. One of the really important things is self-government. And I remember when I grew up, when we took government class, we learned about self-government, controlling ourselves, taking responsibility. What were your responsibilities as a citizen in the United States? And it was so interesting because when I grab government books today, I never see that anymore. And so I ended up, Lynn, I ended up writing my own government book because I wanted to put that in. And so in every section, there are at least two lessons on self-government, because I think that if one of the critical things to create an environment where a government of the people, by the people, and for the people can thrive is that people take responsibility for their own actions. They're able to govern themselves. They don't see themselves as victims. They see themselves as responsible before the Lord for the choices they make and the life they lead. And I think that's kind of a foundational thing. And do you see a change in that since you were young and maybe how your parents raised you? And
yeah, so I haven't been around as many children as you have, and I read your government book. It was excellent. It is excellent. Highly recommend. What I've noticed, my nieces and nephews are brought up with a certain amount of responsibility and accountability because that's the way my parents raised us, right? And but what I see today is that, first of all, we don't have an educated
absolutely
civic populace. So it was really critical when they founded our nation. Ultimately, they founded schools, and they realized the connection between having educated people and having a government that was truly by the people, for the people, because the people have to hold government accountable, and they're not going to be able to hold government accountable if they're not educated.
Right.
And big arguments at the beginning between who was going to be able to represent and actually vote. And there was actually movement early in America that only landowners would be able to vote. You had to have money. And that was quashed. But it was a big argument because all of our founders were rooted in the old aristocracy and the old English ways. And this new thinking about people and rights of people and individual responsibility and individual accountability was all in the forefront. And so the American experiment was an experiment that said, let's give it to the people. Let's really give it to the people in every sense to vote. And so what I see today is a people that, first of all, they don't even understand the framework of our government. I've even heard law professors wanting to throw out our government. Our government was not supposed to be the cure to all of our ills.
Right.
Our government is just a frame. Picture a frame of a picture. A frame of a painting. It gives definition, it borders it, it keeps it contained. But within that frame, we get to decide what happens in Illinois, what happens in Washington, what happens in South Carolina. We get to rule our society, our schools. We get to decide what's going on. And if we are not educated in that, and if we're not raised to be responsible and accountable and sort of self-informed, we can't be good citizens. And today kids are not only not taught, and most people I meet, even people my age, have never read the Declaration. They've never read the Constitution. And it's really sad. But also the kids today are basically being told they are victims. They don't have to be responsible. They don't have to take responsibility. And they get out into the world, they get out into jobs, and they're continuing to be coddled a bit. We all see it. You know, I don't want to come into work every day. I don't want to show up at that meeting. I need a vacation. I need 4 weeks vacation to start. It's not the framework that we grew up in, that old, what we called it, the Protestant work ethic.
No, that is long gone.
It's long gone. but the reality, too, is if you cannot govern yourself and you can't take care of yourself, you are not going to be prepared to be aware that you are part of taking care of the nation and your fellow citizen. Again, we the people. We the people. And if you don't know where that comes from, as I say it over and over, then you need to go Google it. We the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union. So this always confused me how it said more perfect. What does that mean? Because perfect is perfect. How can anything be more perfect? And probably in the last 20 years, I've realized what they meant by this is we gave you the most perfect form of government that we could. Now you are going to make it more perfect every day by making it viable for what's going on in your world. So that meant in 1950s, a guy named Martin Luther King lifted up the documents and pointed to them and said, you're not living up to the words. You're not giving my people the freedoms. Susan B. Anthony stood up and said, these documents tell me that I have rights. Live up to the words of the founders. And ultimately, the nation, the Supreme Court, we realize when there's injustice. But it does take... I'm a woman. I'm sorry. It took us 50 years to get the vote after freed slaves. So male slaves. So injustice is there, but the greatness of the framework of our government is that we can overcome injustice, but we have to be careful because we also have to be careful to guard our rights and not let those ever be taken or marginalized. Good. Because they belong to us. Again, you can't say this enough. Not from God. Or not from government, not even from my fellow man.
Right.
My parents don't even give me these. I am born with the right of freedom. From who? From my creator.
That's right.
It's beautiful.
And you know, we're talking about, you mentioned education. And one of the things, if you are listening and you're a teenager, you're being homeschooled, if you're a parent and you're homeschooling, wow, you are in the perfect situation to give your child a freedom-loving education. And one of the things with freedom, when we talk about, you know, educating children to be free, one of the things that's so critical is freedom of speech, being well-read, and by being well-read, I mean having read classic works that have changed history, knowing what is going on, what ideas are out there in the current day, and whether you agree or disagree, sharing your opinions. One of my favorite things, and I actually did a podcast on it, I'll put that in the show notes, a link to it, but do you know freedom of speech? We had the Federalists and the Anti-Federalists. The Federalists wanted the Constitution. The Anti-Federalists felt like it gave too much power to the central government. And in the Federalist Papers and the Anti-Federalist Papers, they were actually letters to the editors in newspapers. Now we are losing newspapers in our day, but they were letters to the editor and people read them and they were out there for all to read. And when the Federalists won the debate and the Constitution was ratified, the Anti-Federalists didn't pick up their marbles and go home. They got elected to the Congress and they said, we want a Bill of Rights. And it was the Anti-Federalists that gave us the Bill of Rights. Now, had there been no freedom of speech, no out there in the public saying, okay, I agree with the Federalists, but the Anti-Federalists do have a point, would we ever have the Bill of Rights? And if you look at today, how important the Bill of Rights are, even though, like Linda said, some people did not want to write them down because those rights come from God and they're not just limited to those 10. But one of the things, well, more than 10 are in the Bill of Rights, but they're not just limited to what's in the Bill of Rights. But the idea is that there is this freedom of being able to speak, to listen, to respect other people's ideas, to not just make an emotional statement like, you're so stupid, I'm canceling you. No, you know, but to listen to what the other person has to say and to be listened to. And that, it's that, you know, free marketplace of ideas is so important. Even the Lord Jesus doesn't force us to become a Christian. We hear the gospel. He chases after us. We have people come and share the gospel, but ultimately we have the free will to make that choice. And that is something that if the God of the universe who created us can govern us in a way where we can choose yes or no. And so that is something else. I'm going to be honest with you. I just took freedom of speech for granted. And I don't even remember talking about it a lot with my kids. And then lately, when I've seen some things happen with freedom of speech, it's made me that much more concerned. But so freedom of speech, books, reading, so critical to creating an environment where this kind of government of the people, by the people, and for the people can thrive.
Yeah, and one of the joys of being in America, and many nations have this now, but, you know, you have the freedom to stand up and disagree with the president.
Yeah.
You're not going to get beheaded or thrown into jail. And you,
you might get sued right now.
No, I was going to say the day may come, but that dialogue, that free marketplace of ideas you were talking about, is such a rich heritage. It's such a valuable right that we have. And people are now, as you said, they're canceling people. If you disagree with me, or if you disagree with my idea, a person can be canceled, cut off of social media. And it's worse than that. It's one thing if a social media platform decides to cancel my account, fine. They're a private company, whatever. I kind of think they need to be regulated because they have too much influence. But when people are being fired because they stand up for freedom, when a teacher's fired because she carries a Bible into her class, when anyone is fired because their ideas are different or marginalized, that's the scary place. Because if your ideas aren't good enough, strong enough to stand up against another ideas, what worth are your ideas? My father raised me with he always told me this, and I think every child should know this. You believe what you believe as passionately as you can. Stand up for your rights. Shout them from the rooftop. Argue them to the death. But do the same for your neighbor's right to believe whatever they believe, even if it's diametrically opposite of you. Because ultimately what the founders believed was that right and the marketplace of ideas, the nation would be led by righteousness. The nation would ultimately be led by right and good ideas. And when we don't get to talk about our ideas and we cancel people, we shut down the dialogue.
Yeah.
And what we don't realize that by doing that, we then really do cripple our nation. Because we've cut off people who are different than us.
One of the things also, before we leave this section of the best environment, I want to talk about books the Founding Fathers read, because I love to look back and find out what exactly were they reading. And of course, in those times, every household had a Pilgrim's Progress and a Bible. So even if our founders did not have a personal relationship with Jesus Christ, every single one of them, and most of them did, then they definitely knew the Word of God. They knew the Bible. They knew the scripture, had many passages memorized, and they knew Pilgrim's Progress, which is, if you don't know what Pilgrim's Progress is, it's an allegory of the Christian life. Beautifully written, very biblical. And so they have this biblical framework. They also read a lot of Cicero and some of the Roman and Greek writers. They read John Locke, who actually based a lot of his writings on Pastor Samuel Rutherford, who was a Scottish covenanter, a Scottish pastor. They also read a lot about the economy and economics. And that is, I don't know if you knew, but Adam Smith's Wealth of the Nation was published in 1776, the same year the Declaration of Independence was written. And most of the Founding Fathers were very much very much believed in free market economics. So it's very interesting. Now, I could go on and on. There's so many more books that they read, but they were very well read. They read books, they discussed books, and that is something that really scares me because I see us losing the younger generations that, I mean, how many people do you know who read? Most people I know to recreate, they watch TV, they watch movies. I don't know a lot of people who read. Do you?
No. And I ask people, what are you reading? And the general thing is I don't really read that much. You go into homes, there's no library. And if there is, it's kind of more modern fiction or, you know, the suspense novels, but it's the paperbacks. I have a library that my 95-year-old father brought to the house. They live with me now, my parents. And he's got over 3,000 books. And I called local libraries where they were from and then around where I live. And they said, well, we just want paperbacks. We don't want any hardcover books. And it just saddened me that libraries do not want books and people don't read them. And you brought up an interesting thought though, Mayor, because this idea of an educated, you know, citizenry and educated leadership, the free marketplace of ideas, everybody has a right to their opinion, but opinions are only as valuable as the data and the ideas behind those opinions. So when you have a discussion, if you dismiss people, you're not going to hear their ideas. But the other side of it is when you come to the table and you're going to discuss government and you're going to discuss what's going on in the world and you've not been educated, there's very little supporting what you're saying. And that's what's really bothersome to me when I sit there and have conversations with people about the current situation in America. They dismiss some of the things I say. They argue with me. I listen to the news and they say things like your rights come from government. They don't come from God. And I think you have no idea what you're talking about. And I can say that legitimately because I've read the documents. I know the history.
Right. Exactly.
And I will start to talk about facts. And my father always said, there are people that you will discuss things with who do not want to confuse anything with the facts.
My dad said the same thing.
And it's true. I'll have discussions with people about things that you feel are so basic and obvious. And it's almost like you're saying the sky is blue and someone's arguing with you that it's green. That's how it feels. And the thing that I feel even now more so is that the emperor has no clothes. I'm looking at things in our society, like teaching 6-year-old children or having a program for 6 to 8-year-olds about transgender, about sexual life differences. I didn't even learn about sex. I wasn't allowed to even learn about sex from my school district until I was a senior in high school. And then we had a health class that talked about the basics, right? But now, you know, we're learning this stuff, but we're not learning the basics of government history, all this good stuff. So when people come to the table and they start spouting ideas or dismissing other people's ideas and they have nothing to back it up, just a loud voice. And this is the thing. If you're not educated, you listen to those loud voices. I call them the talking heads.
Yep.
And there are hundreds and hundreds of talking heads out there. They're on TikTok. They're on Facebook. They're on CNN. They're on Fox. They're everywhere.
Yeah.
If you are not looking up and reading about what they're saying as to whether it's true, what's the history, what's really going on, shame on you. We have news sources and we listen to them. But even the news back in the day, the newspapers were platforms for political ideas. News and ideas are different.
Well, and also, Linda, historically, the newspapers told you what perspective they had.
Yes.
They would say.
They were honest about their bias.
We're the Democrat newspaper. We're the Republican newspaper.
Exactly. And people listening understood the bias. I have a particular news program that I love. I love a certain news program. I used to watch 2 or 3. I can't even handle watching the other because I just don't hear anything valuable. And I hear a lot of stuff coming out of the news media that is just flat out false.
It's false. I agree.
But even the media that I enjoy, I understand the bias coming in. And if you can understand the bias coming in and then research and understand for yourself, that's where you become a valuable citizen. That's where you have a voice at the table. And unfortunately, what most Americans today are doing is they don't only not have a voice at the table because they're not educated and understand, they've stopped coming to the table. And they're saying, Nancy Pelosi, Joe Biden, whoever else, you run the country, you decide these things, and I'll just sit back and get whatever you can give me, and give me more.
So would you say that the American people maybe don't want to be part of a government of the people, by the people, and for the people, but they do want to be in more of, I don't want to say dictatorship because no one would want a dictator, but more of a monarchy where there's, or an oligarchy where there is leadership at the top who gives the commands. And then, because honestly, Lynn, if we're going to keep a government of the people and for, and by the people and for the people, we're going to have to do things like read our bills, know who our representatives and senators are, and let them know what we think. We're going to have to not just listen to what the candidates say, but how they vote. And, you know, I know plenty of candidates that, wow, when they're talking, they sound like we are on the same page. But then when I see how they're voting, they're not voting the way they were running their campaign. And so if we're going to keep a government of the people, for the people, of the people, by the people, and for the people, we are going to have to put in some effort.
Yeah, and, you know, the founders weren't expecting us all to be lawyers. In fact, I think they would have shuddered at the idea. But they did expect us to understand the basics. It's not rocket science. It's not heavy lifting. It's right. Understanding what's going on, what decisions are being made. But it's also, again, you know, you were talking about self-determination and self-government. If you don't want to govern yourself, if you don't want to be responsible, you're not going to care about governing others and governing a nation. You're going to want people to take care of you. And there's this whole idea right now, you see it everywhere in this country, that others should be taking care of you.
Yeah.
Even when you watch looters going into a store and they're taking things and they say, well, you owe this to me because I've been disenfranchised, or you owe me this. No one owes you anything but the freedom to live your life. And, you know, so it's really sad that they don't understand. They don't really understand this wonderful thing that they've been given and the freedoms that they've been given. And they do want, we hear it all the time, socialism and a little bit communism. Let the state run everything. I'll just take. I don't want to do as much as I used to do. And it goes across everything. So the of the people, by the people, for the people thing is just sort of the last thing that's going to go. And people aren't even going to be aware of it because they've already given up everything else. And they think they're getting something great in return. It'd be great if somebody takes care of me. But like you said earlier, when you allow someone to take care of you, you're giving up some of your autonomy. Like my mom and my dad live with me and I try to take care of them, but the more I have to take care of them because of their age, I have to restrict them. Like, you can't drive more than this many miles, Mom. And she's my mom.
Right.
She's 90, but I'm taking care of her. It's a contract. We agree to it and there have to be restrictions. The same thing happens in America. I'm going to let them arrest parents who go to school board meetings because those parents are saying things I don't agree with. Well, you know what? Those parents are standing up and defending their rights. And if you sit by while your fellow parents, your neighbors are being arrested, it's not what they're saying. It's that they're being arrested for saying something that is in disagreement with a school board. Any police or anyone who sits by and lets that happen, those parents get arrested. That is horrible. That just cuts at the very rights and freedoms that our founders gave us. Every parent should be able to stand up in a school board and shout that the school board is wrong. Yes. That the government is wrong.
I agree.
And in the name of order, we got to keep order. Well, that's been used forever to quiet people down. And yet there's no order on the streets when they're tearing down statues. So also be careful as you watch things. And again, you're talking about being an educated electorate, opening your eyes, being aware of the hypocrisy. What's good for you isn't good for me.
Right.
You can't stand up and shout in a school board meeting if you're shouting against a certain type of thing being taught, like transgender rights or bathrooms where little girls and little boys go to the bathroom in the same room or lockers being shared or sex education for six-year-olds. But if you tear down a statue of somebody in a park, you're okay. If you burn it, if you go to burn a building or you cement shut a courthouse, which happened out west, you're okay because your ideas are okay, but the other person's aren't. So it's all based in ideas. That's the scary.
It's so interesting because at the root of those things is seeing yourself and your own ideas as more valuable than someone else. Okay. And Christianity teaches us that all people are valuable because they're made in the image of God. And it teaches us that there is someone that one day each one of us will die and give an account to. One of the things all of the founders agreed on was there needed to be a moral people, that this experiment would thrive in a condition of morality, faith in Jesus Christ, a Judeo-Christian worldview. And we're going to kind of end with this, but if America's going to continue to be a government of the people, by the people, and for the people, we need revival. We need revival desperately. And not every single person needs to become a Christian, but the main things we agree on need to change. And honestly, just like back in the time of the founding fathers, most of the people need to know God.
It was actually required if you, not at the federal government level, but many of the states and the early colonies, if you wanted to be an elected official, you had to have a religious conviction. You had to have a belief in God. You wanted to testify in court. You needed to be answerable to a higher power. And it was important that, and again, it goes down to self-government. It goes down to understanding authority and understanding where authority comes from. That was really important to the founders. And we have lost that.
Yeah, we have. And I pray so much for our nation to have a revival where people acknowledge they need the Lord. And they have sinned against him, and there is a right and there is a wrong. And I think as we think about our nation, the greatest need that we have, although there are many, yes, people should read the bills and they should contact their senator and they should read books and they should vote and they should do all these things. Yes, yes, yes. But if we are apart from Christ, we don't have true morality. Because when we come to know Christ, when we're born again, his spirit comes and lives in us and he begins to transform us. And we love our enemies, even those people who we might be conservative and they're, you know, very liberal or vice versa. We love those people because they're made in the image of Christ and because he loves them. When it comes to righteousness, we love righteousness. We love life. And we want to protect life. We care about what happens to someone else. We look at others' people's needs as important as our own. And you see that many times. Jesus talking about it. You see it in Romans 12. You see humility throughout the New Testament. And really, to have this kind of government thrive, you have to have humility because you have to see others as better than yourself.
Yeah, the founders also had the hope that by founding a nation that was acknowledging God, the Creator, and Christ, the Redeemer, that the people who created that government and of the people, by the people, for the people, that those people would make sure that the disenfranchised, the widow, the orphan, the foreigner would be protected and cared for and find freedom. And that's why people come from all over the world to America. There's opportunity, yes, but there's opportunity because there's freedom. And those freedoms are supposed to be safeguarded first by the church, second by government. It's really self, family, church, government. Because when those others fall, government falls.
Wow.
Because they begin to become self-seeking and leadership becomes power instead of service.
Wow. So good. Well, wow. Thank you so much for talking with me. And you always have so much wisdom and so much to share. And I just want to encourage you, pray for yourself, pray for your family, pray for your church, and pray for our beautiful nation, that we would be the people, the families, the churches, the government God has called us to be, and that he would bring once again a unity to the United States of America, this government of the people, by the people, and for the people. And I really want to encourage you, if you're wanting to teach government in high school, if you're wanting to teach government in junior high, I have a government curriculum. It's a textbook. It's called Government, God's Blueprint, Man's Agenda. It goes into government. It goes into the Constitution, the military, all kinds of things. It talks about self-government. There are videos that you can watch. There are living books that you can read at the high school level and also at the junior high level. And we even have a dinner where you pretend to be living in the White House and you have another nation over. What is that called, Linda? A
state dinner.
State dinner. I couldn't remember. And yes, so we have a state dinner where we all pretend to be foreign or national dignitaries. And it's really a lot of fun. And we do some hands-on things like that with elections. We encourage the kids to participate at least once or twice in some election things, like holding signs or answering calls. So anyway, I just really encourage you. I have really a heart for our nation, have a heart to see children and teenagers grow up to be adults who love America and who want to serve and who want to make her the best she can be.
And remember too, if I may, because I know we've got to end, but this phrase of the people, by the people, for the people, it was at the end of the Gettysburg Address, a 2-minute speech by a very humble man, Abraham Lincoln. And it was in the middle of what he called the Great Civil War. And here we are on a battlefield, dedicating a battlefield, testing whether that nation or any nation conceived in liberty can long endure. That nation of the people, by the people, for the people. In 1860s, here he is, in the middle of the Civil War. We weren't even 85, 90 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And Lincoln is thinking about the fact that this nation is teetering and can be lost.
Yeah.
And he realized how precious the truth of that government of the people, by the people, the we the people in that Constitution was just so glaringly important to Lincoln. And that's what Mary's talking about, her book and teaching government. It's the importance of instilling that understanding of what this is all about. Because if you don't understand what it's all about and your children don't, Lincoln knew, we will lose it. And Reagan said it can be lost in one generation.
That's true. That's very true.
So teach your children
Amen.
The truth of God's word, the truth of American government and history, all of it. But understand the ideas behind our country are incredibly precious. And it's made up of people, right? People govern. So Churchill said it's the best government next to every other. It's the worst government ever made next to every other government in the history of man. What he was saying is, as long as governments are run by people, we're going to have problems. But if all the people hold them accountable, Anyway, I didn't mean to jump in.
No, I'm glad you did. That was very good.
Lincoln really cared about what
because
was happening.
Because we're teetering right now.
We're in the middle of a great, we are in the middle of a great civil war. There is a spirit in this land that is dividing our nation. We were finally getting closer. No more black, no more white, no more Asian. We were becoming one, and now you're black, you're white, you're gay, you're trans, you're this. The identity, that's a crushing blow to freedom.
Yeah, agreed. Agreed. Don't give up. Don't give up. Keep praying. And I believe God will do something amazing. God bless you, and I'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to Finish Well Podcast with Meredith Curtis and the Finish Well team. Please listen in every first and third Monday of each month at 7 p.m. Eastern Time at the Ultimate Homeschool Podcast Network.